Hello, Humanity First community, and welcome back to the Leading for Children podcast. I'm Julia Connolly, show producer and Leading for Children's Development and Communications Associate. I am so excited to bring you today's episode because for it, I had the magnificent opportunity to interview three mother-daughter duos about what mutuality looks like in their relationships. Our work at Leading for Children is driven by this audacious vision that in the beginning of children's lives, when they're just coming to understand who they are, what this complex world is, and how they fit inside of it, they will be surrounded by adults who model equitable partnerships, who lead with kindness, empathy, and respect, and who embrace the humanity-first approach to life, where everyone is empowered to be seen authentically, see others, and develop connections that uplift communities. And where, so often, is our first opportunity for all of this to happen? With our families, at home. The thing is, we know that while this ideal is possible, it's definitely not everyone's experience. And even when it is, it can be so, so messy. But that's life. Messy. In a beautiful, meaningful, human way. To join me for today's podcast, I invited three mother-daughter pairs who I believe are deeply committed to embodying mutuality in their respective relationships. Don't worry, perfection is certainly not what adjoins these lovely folks because we all know perfection's impossible. Rather, what connects them is their unbridled commitment to learning and upholding their values in relationship with one another. Making this a little extra interesting, each of our duos is currently navigating different stages of life together. All three conversations were recorded separately, and I've put them together for you. First, we'll talk about how intentionality has supported them in developing mutual learning partnerships. Then we'll hear how they navigate conflict together. And finally, our duos will share how they empower each other. Without further ado, let's meet our friends.
My name is Shiloh Gray Stevens. I'm in sixth grade. I'm 10, and I would say that my three favorite things to do is to dance, draw, and play piano.
My name is Serene Stevens, and I am a program leader with LFC, and I am also a proud mom of three. One of my children is joining us for today's conversation. And so I'm a mom, an educator, and I wear many different hats, and I am especially excited to be here.
My name is Elizabeth. I am a junior at the University of Arkansas studying political science and African American studies with minors in Southern studies and history. I'm 21 years old.
I am Jill Gunderman, and Elizabeth is my only daughter. She has an older brother and a younger brother, so I'm a mom of three. My background has been centered around early childhood education, specifically around child development and leadership development and things of that nature.
I'm Jennifer Rocks, and I am a mother of three of my most favorite humans on the planet. And I am a daughter. I'm a sister. I am a psychologist. I'm a student. I'm going to stop there for now.
I am Kathy Rocks. I am Julia's grandmother. I am Jennifer's mother. I am a sister-in-law, and I am a friend to lots of people, and I'm not working right now, but my background was in education and counseling.
At LFC, we begin our conversations by slowing down, pausing, and taking a breath. This helps us come off of autopilot and enter the space with intention, choosing how we want to show up for ourselves and with others. This practice of being intentional can support us in all areas of life. In this first segment, Serene shares that she's learned each of her children process and show up in the world uniquely. Shiloh affirms how meaningful it really is when she feels her mom making that effort.
I would say that for me, what our relationship looks and feels like is warm and considerate. You know, the responsibility of being a parent goes beyond the food, clothing, shelter. Those things are very necessary. And there's another aspect of parenting that is really important to me, And it is considering how my children feel and the things that help pour into their feelings of worthiness and their value, their self-esteem. That is what drives me when it comes to my relationships and my interactions with my children.
I think of our relationship as, like Mom said, warm and very welcoming and honest. And like when I need help, I know that I could go to Mom. I like to stay very open with her. I can have my opinion heard. Even if there are disagreements sometimes, overall, it's really enjoyable to have that relationship.
I think about the 11 simple rules, open and honest. And that connects to transparency. And so transparent is something that I try to be with my children within reason, right? In consideration of who they are, where they are developmentally, and open, where it invites them to share and I share with them. And as it connects to the five commitments, I would say that I think about the impact a lot in my parenting. Actually, I think about it day and night. So many different things that I do, I'm constantly thinking about how it would affect my children, what it would result in. I'm thinking about who they are as individuals. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a mom of three, and they are all very different from one another. And so because they're very different from one another, different decisions that I make impact them all differently. And it takes time and patience to nurture that relationship between mother and daughter. And it can be really, really rocky. Shiloh is 10 years old, and I don't know what 16-year-old Shiloh will be like. And I don't know what 17-year-old or 21-year-old Shiloh will be like. I know what 16-year-old Serene was like, as I imagine that Shiloh could potentially be similar. I go, okay, time and patience, right? And even with 10-year-old Shiloh right now, I think time and patience, right? To learn about who someone is as an individual. But while you're also being responsible for the care of that person, and then the last part of that is that you are constantly learning about yourself while doing those things. That is not the easiest thing to do on a daily basis. And so I would say, notice that it takes time and patience and be patient with yourself.
The thing I wanted to say is keep a slot open for your daughter, because that's how you would learn more about them and you could even develop more patience and understanding of how they think while also having fun making memories in that. I know a few times where I've just randomly said, okay, let's do this thing, plan initiated. And then because Mom had time open, we could just go somewhere and make memories that stick even to this day. Me and my mom have similar hobbies, like coloring or even crocheting and writing, because I love writing. So like every time I see Mom doing something that I also like to do, I just feel like a stronger bond with her. Sometimes I can even make ideas and activities out of the stuff that we love to do together.
Anytime two people come together, no matter their differences, be it in age, life experiences, or roles, there's an opportunity for partnership. As Jill came to understand this, she shares that she used intention to challenge conventional parental hierarchies. She knew that by practicing curiosity, she could cultivate equity and create a relationship with Elizabeth where they both felt valued and supported.
That word partnership really comes to mind for me and my motherhood journey. Really, it started early on, and first kind of bubbled up for me at our nursing relationship. I hadn't thought of a partnership of we're both entering into this space together until someone offered me to think about it in that way. And I thought, whoa, we both come into this space, even though we're talking about an infant. in this equitable place of what's working for her and is it working for me? And it was around your weaning. When was the right time for you to wean and how did that impact both her and me? I was able to see each of us in distinctive roles, you know? And so it kind of laid the foundation. And from that point forward, I think of different moments in your life, Elizabeth, where I've had the opportunity to think, well, is this my agenda that I'm envisioning for her? Or is this what she wants? And where do I foster and listen and get her voice? Like, how can I help nurture her voice so that I can hear it, but so that she can hear it as well? I mean, I have learned so much from her, from watching her, from how she responds to something, and I go, oh, I never thought about it that way before, and do seek her perspective. You know, granted, I've got 30 more years on this planet than you do, but just because I have more years doesn't mean that mine is more right. It's just different. And not to assume that I know everything. I don't. I absolutely don't. No. I absolutely do not. You know, I know what it feels like to be a 21-year-old. But I don't know what it feels like to be a 21-year-old in 2024 and in Elizabeth's world and in Elizabeth's skin and in her perspective. And so to honor that perspective and be curious in that space.
A lot of the relationship you have with your mother is shaped before you're old enough to make a decision of what you want it to look like. I feel like that mutual learning partnership definitely started with you because I was a child and I was not like conscious or intentional, but to some extent, I started being intentional when I looked around at some of my friends or my peers and noticed their relationship with their parents, with their mothers in particular, and realized that everyone didn't have this. And so once I realized that and how grateful I was for this relationship and that it is equitable and I feel like my voice is heard, I was able to shift and be more intentional about it, that it's not something that just happened. It's not just we got lucky and this is what appeared. We both put in work on each side to cultivate that relationship and ensure that it lasts.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about hierarchy and that power dynamic, you know, not to say that Elizabeth's whole life I haven't established boundaries or mm-hmm. there haven't been me saying, well, here's the rule, you know, as she got older and as her brain grew and as it was really appropriate to release some of those pieces. Yes, those foundation pieces were there, but also to challenge that hierarchy. Just because you're a mom doesn't mean you have to be the boss all the time, mm-hmm. you know, and similarly, just because you want your child to have a voice doesn't mean that you should let them be the boss, quote unquote, all the time either, but that you are both equal partners in this. Both of your voices matter. Both of your perspectives matter. And be willing to hold space and then keep the end goal in mind.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing I respect most of my mother and what I've learned from her too is that just because life gives you a certain set of circumstances doesn't mean that defines your future. My mom was raised very differently than I was. She had different experiences and different relationships, and some of those were amazing and great. Not all of them were, I would say, positive. But she recognized that, and she didn't let that happen to me. Not that that can be totally prevented because, you know, the world and life, but she chose to do the work and to break cycles of things that weren't good without being bitter or mean or hateful, of making choices that she knew were going to be better for herself and her children, even if they meant that her life was going to be harder, because she valued that kind of future, the future that she wanted, that much.
It's a privilege. Mm-hmm. It's a privilege. I don't ever underestimate that not everyone has the opportunity to have these types of relationships. Mm-hmm. And when you find yourself where you get the privilege of being the mom of a daughter, or you get to have a dynamic in a friendship, what a gift and a privilege to lean into when you find people that mutually support you in that way and value you in that way and are curious about who you are and what your thoughts are and are just delighted to be in your presence. You know, I mean, I just think that's the heart of it too, of just genuinely delight in each other. thinking about that, one thing that bubbles in my brain is think impact. And I think about, what's my end game in this interaction, in this decision, in this experience for my daughter? My end game is I want to have a relationship with her as an adult. So I back down the path, and what decisions do I need to make then when she's 3 and she's 6 and she's 9 and she's 12 and she's 16 so that I can still preserve that?
I think it goes back to, well, do I want to have an adult relationship with my parents, with my mom? Because I'm at that point in my life where I could not, you know, if it's not a valuable relationship to me, why would I stay in it? But it is valuable and I do appreciate it. And it doesn't just happen. I go to college in the same town where I grew up, so I'm really close to my family, but I still don't have to come home and see them. When I get busy, I have to make time and be intentional with that. I schedule it in. But I value this relationship, and so it's worth it to put in the work to me.
Yeah. I want my children to want to have a relationship with me and my husband for their parents. I don't want them to feel like they're obligated to have a relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to feel guilt if they haven't called me in so many days or whatever. I want them to want to see this as a relationship worth having, because I value it and I do too. You know, I think Elizabeth's a really cool person and I like hanging out with her, and she's got a great point of view and I like hearing her thoughts. And I think about that, you know, and granted now she's an adult, but I think about that and hopefully in a cultivated space where it's important to them too. But if not, and life leads you down a different path, no harm, no foul, you know, right. I'm here. You know, I think for me, that's the definition of love. And to your point, I don't ever want you to stay in any relationship where you don't feel valued or an equitable partner mm-hmm. in any space. I want to make sure that you feel valued and an equitable partner so that you'll want to stay in this one, because I like you. I think you're pretty cool.
Thanks.
We are human, imperfect, wounded, yet precious and always evolving. As we learn and our values clarify throughout our lives, we can adjust our behavior to stay aligned with them. Sometimes we're able to meet each other where we're at, and sometimes our human limitations interfere. But we always have the opportunity to come back and use intention to practice mutuality. Next, we'll hear from Kathy and Jennifer, who are, as you'll soon find out, still deeply engaged in this process.
I feel like Jennifer and I are both adulting now, but, you know, 50 years ago, there was more power dynamics. And I don't need to have that now. I've learned a lot and I keep growing and I want to keep learning. I'm a different person today than I was when I was raising Jennifer and Matthew. And I want to be the best person I can be in showing up for Jennifer and my grandchildren now, and even for my friends.
I really appreciate what you just said, Mom. Acknowledging the developmental process of our relationship, you know, each of us as humans and then our relationship, and to name the power dynamics that were in play when I was a child and then how that evolves over time, the child as they individuate and the parent as they individuate from the child.
It goes back to the whole power struggle. I feel like I don't have that anymore. I don't have the urgency to, okay, I got a parent, I got to go do this. And now I feel like I have all the time in the world to be. And that chokes me up. That's how I want to show up.
When you get choked up, makes me want to like move right in and respond. Now I feel choked up. But it makes me want to come towards you and hear more about that. It feels good to hear you reveal parts of yourself explicitly, I guess.
I have something that I read that really resonated with me. I'd like to read it not only for you and Julia, but for the listeners. Looking back gives us a gift, allows us to see moments that once felt impossible, the ones that broke our hearts, and to see them differently. Because now, with the space of time, we can see not just what hurts us or where we've hurt others, but we can see everything else that was happening too. We see how tangled it was and how human we all were. And in that wider view, in that sense of the whole puzzle, compassion and forgiveness are there waiting for us. They open their arms and they say, "Come here, I've been waiting for you to see this, to see that you were enough all along, and so were they." This is the grace of aging, that we get to see our lives through the lens of all that we've learned since, and it frees us, it softens us, and it lets us love the life we've lived, flaws and all.
That really chokes me up, Mom. Those aren't words or sentiments that I've ever heard from you before. And I think things that I've been longing to hear from you. And I feel like it opens up a door, a really big door to deeper connection with you, to hear that you want to have those kinds of conversations and that you're ready and you're able and, but mostly want to. What the words of that reading did to me was kind of take me on a journey in my own mind, like a flash of our relationship and the influences on our relationship contextually over time. And truthfully, it feels like a reach toward me and our relationship that is really tender, feels very tender. My tears come faster than my words. So I'm having a hard time articulating it, but it means a lot to me. And I think in this moment, I see you differently. And I really appreciate the humanness you just brought to us. It really, really feels like you showed up. You showed up ready and wanting and willing and open-heartedly and generously, generous of heart and generous of spirit to offer that. And then it feels really supportive, like you did the work and I didn't have to. Thank you.
Thank you for saying all those words, and thank you for being you. And I love you. And if we were together, we'd be doing a big group hug.
Yes, we would.
We're living, we're learning, and we're doing it together. When we have the courage to share our authentic selves with another person, they have an opportunity to know us better and offer support that fortifies us. Vulnerability cultivates deeper connection. Now, inevitably, when you're close to somebody, there will be times of tension and disagreement. In this next segment, our duos discuss how they navigate those tough moments together. Serene shares an essential message. It's not that you disagree, it's how you disagree.
I feel like sometimes something that might get in the way of me being too stubborn about something. What I usually do when I get too stubborn about something, I actually sit down and think, like, is there something that I could have done differently? And then I'll talk about it, and I'll definitely share my opinion, but I'll also leave room for me to think about, like, my decisions too. So I think the advice that I'll give is, even if you're disagreeing on something, you should think about, like, both sides of the story.
Yeah. I think for me, what gets in the way of the connection during moments of disagreement is my beliefs about things being right and wrong. And some of those ideas come from my own upbringing. And I notice that sometimes I'll feel in conflict with myself, even as I am talking with Shiloh, or she has an idea and I have a different idea, and then we disagree. And so what I've found is that, similar to what, you know, Shiloh was sharing here, being reflective about that and having a willingness to shift. And when we disagree with each other, what also becomes important to me is how we disagree with each other. And so that's what I would say to others. Being human means that you will disagree, or you will have ideas that are different from other people's ideas. But the way in which you disagree can really make or break or really hurt the relationship in ways that you might not realize it. And so it's necessary to notice that and still maintain respect still remember love, still care, still be considerate, right? All of that can happen and you still disagree.
When a relationship is open, there's space for reflection without judgment. When there isn't judgment, we can communicate before resistance develops within ourselves and within our relationships. And when it does, it encourages us to repair fractures collaboratively. Next, Jill and Elizabeth talk about how when you trust one another, you can lean into disagreements and allow them to strengthen you.
From my perspective, I have, fight isn't the right word, but like disagreements more with my mother than I do with like any other member of my family. Right? Which might just be like the whole mother-daughter thing, the classic like, oh, they're gonna butt heads, whatever. But I think there's something deeper there where I feel comfortable pushing back a little bit. I feel comfortable going, no, I don't want to do that. This is my life. I'm going to do this. Now, do I look back sometimes and go, I see that was maybe not the smartest choice, but I'm 21. That's supposed to happen. I think in those moments, understanding that both of us are coming from a place of wanting to help each other and being understanding where those feelings are coming from, and that you have my best intentions at heart, right? Even if we have a disagreement about how we should go about something, our end goal is the same. I think also not being afraid of conflict, of I'm going to do something and I don't think my mom's going to love this decision, but it's not because it's a bad thing to do or a wrong decision to make. It's just a different one, and it's not the one that she would make. And knowing that she'll come to terms with it.
Yeah. Yeah. That assumed positive intent. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about it until you mentioned that, Elizabeth, but you're right. It's assuming the positive intent of the other person of like, no, she's not doing this just to make me crazy. Although there are moments where I have actually thought that in my life. She is intentionally doing this to make me crazy. But really that she's doing this from a place of curiosity. She's doing this from a place of wanting to be her own person. And there are moments where I'm like, oh, I wish she'd do that. You know, and then she does her thing and it works out fantastic for her. And I'm like, oh gosh, I'm so glad she didn't do what I said. Mm-hmm. And there are moments where I'm like, oh, I wish she'd do it my way. And she doesn't. And then it comes back and I'm like, yeah, I know. I was right. But I don't rubber face in
you it. Don't say
you know,
I
don't say I told you so. I might do a little cartwheel inside sometimes. I'm teasing. But I don't, because it's, and I say that in a playful way, because it is, it's her life and it's her decisions at the end of the day. And that's hard. That's hard. I do think you're right. I joke that I am the only barrier between her and world domination. Because her brothers, her dad, everyone else in her life kind of easily goes along with what she says. And I go, I have to be the speed bump for you, sis. And I say that jokingly, but almost a little seriously in that we have that kind of rapport and respect. I feel confident you know that if I do raise the flag of a concern I have, that you will hear me. You may not do it, which is your choice, but I've tried to raise you in a world where if I do say, hey, this is something I have a concern about, that you'll listen to do that. It can't be that I have a concern every time you turn around.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, if you're wearing pink socks with a blue shirt, I can't go, you know, or I'm not.
Pick your battles.
I pick my battles, right? So that when I do flag something, hopefully you'll take it with a little more extra dose of consideration.
But on that note of picking your battles of, there's a little Southern bell raising over here. We're both from Arkansas, right? Of, Elizabeth, you're not supposed to wear white after Labor Day. Right? Right? I distinctly remember going, you know, Mom, I appreciate you saying that. I really don't care. And it's not that I don't care about your viewpoint, but that's just not a value to me. But understanding that now, if I'm wearing white after Labor Day, inside, I know she's a little bit going, I wish you wouldn't do that. But she's picking her battles. She knows already that that's not a big deal to me. So she's not going to fight me on that one. You know what I mean? But that means that when she does raise a concern, I listen.
We often squabble the most with those we love, care about, and trust the most. And we don't want to damage those relationships. When we self-regulate before reacting, noticing what's happening in our minds and our hearts and our bodies, perhaps choosing our battles or our words more carefully, we can handle conflict with grace and with respect. Next, Kathy and Jennifer share how practicing honesty allows their relationship to deepen and space for compassion to open up.
I think that when I'm with someone, I'm a curious learner. Even if there's a dynamic that is fractured or we've stumbled over, I have the skill now to come back and say, when this happened, this is how I was feeling. How are you feeling? And have it be a two-way communication and be curious about where was the other person coming from that maybe I missed in that situation. It goes without saying, but I'll say it, that you, Jennifer, are extremely important to me. And if there is ever any kind of rift, I love the fact that we have two-way communication. I can hear your heart stuff and you can hear my heart stuff. And I love that we can come back to each other and say, hey, something's on my mind and I'm learning. I don't want to be reactive, but I do sit with things. And my next step is, okay, I've sat with these feelings now. It's time to come to Jennifer and say, hey, can you hear me? You know, I need a conversation with us. I just appreciate so much being able to come to you with my tender heart and say what I'm feeling or what I need if we need to repair something, especially if it's something hard.
I love your tender heart, Mom. I love tender hearts and I love your tender heart. And I really appreciate that you are interested in my tender heart. The word that has come up for me throughout the things that I've been listening to you say is honest. I've identified in my practice that it's so difficult for people to be honest. I think we like to think of ourselves as being honest people and take that at this face value of like, you know, I don't sneak into movie theaters or I return change that was given to me inappropriately at the grocery store, like that kind of honesty. But I think we don't do a deeper dive into our hearts and beings and reveal what is actually true for us in any given moment, especially when it's hard. And in our culture and society, we don't get a lot of support with our feelings. We get a lot of support with external successes that people can concretely see, but we don't get a lot of support with what's happening on the inside. Your face has an expression. Tell me about it. You're letting me know that you're angry. Tell me about you're mad. I see tears. What are your tears saying? You know, we don't get that. And so we don't know how to really be honest. Those feelings often just move into a reaction. And then oftentimes we hurt people from our reactions. And something that's very important to me is helping to identify and explore where those feelings come from and how they impact us and how we maybe need to attend to them inside of ourselves in a way that they weren't attended to outside of ourselves, you know. And then that awareness allows us to recognize that everybody's got that same process happening with these places of hurt and pain. And we can come toward each other in a more human way when we open our hearts to other people's pain. Can we hold space generously for people's truths? We can have deeper, more intentional contact when we are in truth with ourselves and each other.
I agree. And I think that we have been able to do that. Sometimes I would approach you, Jennifer, and I would say, okay, I'm going to take a risk. I'm just going to say this. And that soothes me or gently approaches what I have to say. And I guess one thing I'd like to pass on to our listeners is an example that I have had, let's say from Jennifer, or about something that's happening. And then I don't hear about it for a while. So in my mind, I'm still having this story about what I heard a week or two ago. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I have to check this out. So there's a hard part for me that I need to come back to Jennifer and say, this is what I heard 2 weeks ago. Please keep me in the loop. Where is the story now? I just so appreciate that we can do that with each other.
Me too. And I think, Mom, I love when you come to me and say, now, here's what I'm thinking, and I hope you can hear this. I'm going to take a risk. And I love that, Mom. I love that because I think, A, it reveals something about you that you've been thinking about and that's on your heart, and I want to know that. And B, it demonstrates a lot of care for me and our relationship, and I super appreciate that. And then C, I often find that when you think you're taking a risk, for me, it doesn't come off as anything terrible or particularly hard. And then I really like to be able to ease your mind and ease your heart. Like, oh, thank you for checking that out with me. It's not a big deal. It's okay.
It always seems to come back to trust. Serene and Shiloh spoke about how leaning into healthy skills during conflict makes us reliable and safe. Jill and Elizabeth talk about how trusting each other's intentions and discretion can prevent unnecessary tension. And Kathy and Jennifer discussed the freedom and potential that comes with trusting that each of you are willing to hear and hold the hard stuff. In our final segment, our partners explore how this super special mother-daughter dynamic can foster empowerment. Serene begins by sharing how her personal life experience made it especially important to her that she create space for her children to express themselves, and how throughout that process, she's become braver too.
As a child, the adults in my world were really great caretakers, and I think their focus was a lot on provisional care. And my mom was very big on education, still is, and making sure that we had experiences that went beyond the classroom. My mom really made sure that we were safe and taken care of. And the one thing, though, that there was not a lot of space for was our voice, specifically as it related to sharing of opinions, ideas, and especially not when it came to sharing thoughts that opposed or that were different from the thoughts of the grownups around us and around me. And so I often realized that I kept a lot of my thoughts and ideas written down in journals. And in fact, I was actually instructed to write my thoughts and ideas down as opposed to sharing them. I remember moments when I was dealing with challenging emotions and I didn't know how to express them. Let's say if I was frustrated and I tried to express myself from this very frustrated place, I was actually told to please write it down in a journal because the way that I was saying it was not okay. And it was a better idea for me to keep it in a journal so that I don't say anything that gets me in trouble. And so what I found is that although it helped me to be a really great writer, it kept the ideas to myself. And I had a lot of ideas to share, and I had a lot of opinions about a lot of different things. And so I knew that when I had children, that that was going to be a top priority to me, to make sure that they get to share their ideas with me, that they get to share the things that may even be hard for me to hear. You know, my oldest is 21 and Shiloh is 10 and my younger son is 18. And I think that we did a good job of creating a space that is open for them to share their thoughts and ideas with us.
I think that I definitely do have space for my opinions and my thoughts. Mom did a good job of getting her point through to all three of us. Even though it might be hard for either of us, we could still say them. I also can just vibe with my family and still have fun. So I'm just very happy about all that.
And for me, something that I've learned through Shiloh is that she's not her siblings, that she's not me. And I think that it's really easy at times when you have a daughter to live vicariously through or to see yourself in them. And while I think that that is a beautiful thing to see yourself in them or to see where there are similarities, it has been such a beautiful experience to notice the things that are unique to Shiloh. And I've really had an opportunity in these 10 years so far to notice how she is her own self and the opportunity to learn what that self is. her preferences and what sparks a light in her eyes to what even frustrates her. And those things can be very different from what impacts me or her brothers. And one of the things that I've had more and more clarity about as Shiloh is getting older is the societal expectations of what it is to be a woman. And some of those things I've pushed against a lot in my life. And so having a daughter has brought some of those things more clear into focus of how many different things get placed on people, period. All of the you're supposed to be and you should be and this is what you need to be. And I have not only now had a chance to explore it for myself, but I'm also needing to navigate it with Shiloh and think about ways together of how do we navigate in spaces where people say that this is what you're supposed to do and this is how you're supposed to be. How do we respect it, acknowledge it, challenge it when we feel we need to? And what does that look like? I get a chance to practice empowerment. And Shiloh actually helps me and encourages me to be braver.
Through others' journeys of empowerment, we can learn about our own. Jill and Elizabeth talk next about how when mothers use courage to manage their fear and uncertainty about their daughters growing up and practicing independence, they give daughters the opportunity to develop confidence and agency.
Something that struck me early in my parenting journey is hearing this idea that our parents' voice become our children's inner voice. If that is true, and if my voice comes out in her head, what are the messages I want her to hear? And secondly, how can I ensure that it's her voice that she's listening to and not mine?
Yeah.
You know, and her trusting her opinion and her perspective. And I think about a time when we went dress shopping and you're probably 12 and she had to, you know, have a dress for this formal type of event with friends. And I knew my favorites. She tried on several dresses and I was like, oh my gosh, I love the purple on her. Her skin glows, her eyes shine. Purple's my favorite color. I love it. But when she would come out, she would ask me, well, what do you think? And I purposefully held my tongue to say, well, what do you think? Mm-hmm. How do you feel? What do you feel? And like stayed with her in that moment for her to really come to that conclusion and offer that. And it took her a minute. But my goal in that is I want you, Elizabeth, to trust your voice because there'll be a time when I'm not going to be here. And so for her to be so reliant on my voice, I do her a disservice. She knows her own mind. And so if I can create the space and cultivate that. Now, that doesn't say that she doesn't pick up the phone and call me. She goes, which should I do first? Help. My brain is tired of making decisions. And I'm like, oh, I got you. I can help you. And she leans on me, right? But it's not me picking up the phone and going, you got to do this, that, and the other. I don't know. And I misstep. I mean, I often will tell you something that you're not wanting to hear. And then I go, oh, yeah, I told that. She didn't ask for that.
I think piggybacking off of that, though, because the parental relationship is one of the first relationships that any child or person has, that's your first role model of how any relationship's going to look. So if I'm always looking for my mother's approval, I feel like that's what I would search for in any other relationship, you know, with a partner, with a friendship. Well, what do I want? Well, what does my friend want? What's more important to her? You know, there's a time to care for them and what they think about. But ultimately, when it comes down to what actions I want to take, how I want my life to look, I want that to be my voice that is leading and not always shifting myself to what other people want.
Elizabeth, right before her freshman year, had the opportunity to visit Ireland and Scotland with a friend of hers. I had only been out of the country one other time. I've only now been out twice. I've never been over the Atlantic. Elizabeth was flying with this friend, first time ever for her to be out of the country, and she was flying home alone. But it was a unique opportunity. It was an amazing opportunity. And I had so many fears and anxieties and all the things and all the scenarios that moms worry about that could go wrong and all the things. And, you know, I remember having a moment and you were really respectful with me when you presented the idea. You said, just think about this opportunity and don't make a decision right now, but just think about it. You know, yeah. So she treated me with respect in that regard too. Just marinate on this a moment, Mom. And so allowed me the space to kind of work through my feelings, to kind of go, my anxieties of flying over the Atlantic or what have you, those are not hers. I shouldn't put that on her. We've talked through scenarios. I've raised her to trust her voice and to be aware. And it's time to trust her. It's time to trust our relationship and what I've done as a mom. It's a time for me to trust me too and my feelings, and that I can handle that and she can handle that. And she did, and we did, and it was great. But I had to work through that a little bit. And I do appreciate you recognizing that I would have big feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and let me have those feelings. But it was really a moment for me of, I can't parent from a place of fear. If I impose my fears onto you, I do you a disservice, you know, trusting yourself, trusting that if something horrible happens, you'll handle it. We'll handle it.
That's funny that you thought of the same thing.
Yeah. I was thinking in particular of, I studied abroad in Italy for 5 weeks this summer. And without having been able to travel to Ireland essentially by myself, without being able to take other trips by myself, without being able to drive to my grandparents by myself, I take the step backs of, you know, each time, I know it wasn't easy for you, but you had to let go a little bit and trust that I would be okay, that you had taught me enough that I would be okay, leads me to this point where I can be independent and I can be independent without isolating myself from everyone. You know, I can be independent and never talk to my family, but I can be independent and also have a good relationship with each member of my family.
You know, and I was transparent with you about my feelings too, you know, and I was transparent and working through my feelings.
Yeah. You made it clear. It was never that you didn't trust me. Mm-hmm. It was that
this is hard.
This is hard.
This is hard. And I can do it.
And there's so many factors in the world that can make it anxious, you know, but it was never about my ability to do this. That was your concern.
Yeah.
Which was a big thing to me.
I am regularly amazed by the confidence that she shows and how she voices and expresses herself on behalf of her viewpoint, but also on behalf of people who have not found their voice in that way yet. I think, wow, wow, that happened, you know. I do remember being at the doctor's office and finding out I was having a girl. And I was so excited, so excited. You know, she had a big brother. I so loved being a mom of a son and just cherish that. It's a unique relationship in of itself. And then go, oh, wow, I get to be the mom of a daughter too. And then on the drive home going, oh, wow. Wow, what a responsibility. How do I raise this young woman in this climate, in this world, who has confidence to be who she is, who cannot let the voices that are surrounding her from society of who she should be and how she should be. And, you know, how do I instill in her this strength? I tell her she comes from a long line of some strong women who have, I think about my grandmother and my great aunts, my mom, and the challenges they faced in their generations and myself. And I go, how do I cultivate that strength in her? And then I see her and I go, I did it. And not just me, not just me. It's who she is. She came into the world pretty, pretty strong-willed with an idea and a perspective. But so what I have learned from Elizabeth is how to express yourself, how to be solid in your sense of self, how to advocate for yourself and for others, and to trust your inner voice, not to be afraid of adventure. She gives things a shot where I might think it over 50,000 times and she just does it, which is pretty fascinating for me. She's willing to share why, her why. She's willing to share what she thinks. Even if I've had a thought, I don't know that I've necessarily felt safe or confident in that space to share my ideas. And so she's willing to put it out there, which is really cool to see.
And I think even the thing that my mom said she admires in me of that courage and resilience and willingness to speak up, I think a lot of those things I learned from her, even if she didn't realize she was teaching me them, even if she wasn't exactly expressing them in the way that I do, she was teaching me the values and giving me the tools to make that happen.
Hadn't thought about it that way.
When women slow down and become present and intentional inside of themselves and with each other, it is truly powerful. In this last section, because it was my mom and grandma, I got a little bit involved.
I think it's so critical for women to be fierce allies of each other and slow down and enact respect, enact mutuality, to practice these things, open communication, honest communication, for all of us to do our work, for moms to do our work, you know, the generational ancestral traumas that have been passed down to us and that we've incorporated into the fabric of our beings, but to really be intentional about undoing that or forgiving that or healing, I guess is the word, and really understanding the impacts of that inside our own beings so that we cannot enact them with our daughters. And we do that, I think, just by slowing down and feeling into our bodies, feeling into our hearts, being honest, revealing ourselves, staying in our power, not giving our power away. Mom, like you said, be curious, not just what do I think and what do I want my kid to know, but what is my child thinking? What messages are they picking up in the community and in the media with their friends and peers? And not just top down, but egalitarian approach to relationshiping in parent-child relationships.
I think about how you've both been so intentional about respecting all of me. And I know that you do because you value how I feel and how I process information and what I create and figure out. And then for me to be able to share all of those parts of myself with two people who I love and respect so much, and receive feedback from you that I matter, you know, when you come to me as a peer and you ask, Julia, what do you think? All of that supports me in developing my identity that I am smart, I am creative, I am reliable, I'm an interesting person to ask questions to, you know, and that has helped me develop a sense of confidence and trust in myself and more curiosity. And all of that fuels me to do more things because I feel like I can. I trust myself because I trust you, and you have throughout my life made me feel like I can.
Yeah, Julia, I think that you have said to me on a number of occasions about the time that I invited you to take me off of a pedestal and how empowering that was for you. And I really, truly meant it wholeheartedly, because we're all fallible as humans. And I am just enormously blown away with your facility of synthesis. I know you've heard us say that before, but even just today, how you've listened and taken in all the words that have been said here and the words of your organization, and I feel a little choked up. I can hear Judy in you, and that is just beautiful. I can hear the way that she facilitates. I hear you learning from her, and it is awesome to witness. Like, it goes right into the core of my guts, how I experience you in your empowered place of your own you-ness. You know, I hear all of the influences and the things that are important to you, and just love learning from you and hearing your ideas and creativity and vision and experiences come forward every time you speak, even in your humor and in your softness and in your smartness. And it's just so exciting to see how you move past generational limitations.
Thank you. And I really, really wholeheartedly feel that I wouldn't have been able to do any of this generational limitation overcoming if I hadn't had you, as an example, doing some pretty serious boundary breaking yourself. You know, when I was in third grade, you decided you wanted to go back to graduate school and become a psychologist, and you had three little kids and were on the verge of a divorce, and then you got divorced while you were in the program, and you partnered with a woman for the first time. And you were learning so very much about yourself and how you wanted to fit into the world. And I got to watch you learning about yourself. I don't have to tell you that that was a really, really big deal. And a lot of those things that you did were not universally considered acceptable. And you did them despite the fact that your identity through that point in your life had been developed around always doing the right thing, according to everyone else's standards. And it showed me that doing the right thing is not always what everyone else thinks is the right thing. It's about figuring out what that is for you and how you want to be in the world, and then setting that example for your children. So thank you for setting that example for me. That, my friends, was our episode. I am so glad that you could join us and hope you felt inspired like I did by these moments of raw authenticity, emotion, and connection. You can subscribe to the Leading for Children podcast on all streaming platforms, including YouTube, and turn your notifications on so you're the first to know when we post a new episode. Sign up for our mailing list at leadingforchildren.org to stay updated on upcoming events like our monthly national conversation and to be notified when our monthly blogs are published. We would also love for you to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We are so grateful that you're part of our Humanity First community. Wishing you optimism. Till next time.